in New York, your station for news as it happens.
Captain is strapped into his seat. He puts on his helmet, his dark sunglasses. He looks up into the blazing sun and then reaches over and slowly begins to move the throttle forward. And the great machine roars, roars, and roars out. Once again, it is time for the Magic Mystery Hour! Down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, the city commission has just passed an ordinance banning obscenity in books, magazines, and records. And the law is so specific. It is so specific, this law, that it is obscene in itself. And the law cannot be made public. Would you please, Al, if you will, please. That solemn realization that man is moving into the... He's really moving into the realm of the Wienanums. Here, let's go. Give my regard to the sales department. Tell them I will soon be there. Oh, give my regard to the old salesman and tell them everything's going to be cool. La-da-da-ti-chi-ti-ta. Concludes tonight's salute to the 23rd floor. Reset that, Al, please. Listen, I have a very enigmatic note here that I don't know. I'm a little worried about it. It comes from the top people here at the station. I mean, there are certain departments here at the station that are so exalted, so high up in the hierarchy of this vast crystal palace that we inhabit here. And by the way, for those of you who wonder what I'm talking about, any guy who's ever worked in a gigantic organization knows what the term crystal palace refers to. And I'm broadcasting you direct from the crystal palace tonight, right? All right. Knock twice, and look out. That air conditioner is about to blow a fuse. Help, help, ah! Oh, gee. Sick scene. But nevertheless, I have received a message here from a department. I'll bet that, Al, you've been here, let's see, this is your 107th year. Isn't it something like that? Well, no, don't laugh. Don't laugh. Al was here when RKO was making Vera Ruba Ralston movies, right? Well, I have received a message from a department so high up in this organization that they've got their own letterhead. I mean, now that's really scary. See it? Have you seen that one? I haven't either. There it is, see? And it says, Mr. Shepherd. And when you get a letter, believe me, it's not even a memo. It's a letter. It came in the post. It says, Mr. Shepherd, have you abandoned the nose flute for good? I didn't think they knew. I didn't think they cared. Our latest research on the 15th floor revealed that hordes of people with aesthetic quotients of far above average, or even higher, are demanding more nose. This is the research department. And underneath it, it says, use your head, but don't neglect your nose. 15th floor research department head. So I can't fight it, friends. I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, believe me, I mean, you may think that Johnny Carson is anomalous, omniscient. What is it? Anomalous? I mean, he's the king over there, right? Over at the channel, Whoopi, or whatever it is he works on. Forget it. If he gets a message signed Bobby S., that is a man named Mr. Sarnoff, he does not run it into the circular file. If he gets a message that says Bobby likes tap dancing, wouldn't it be kind of nice if you tap danced maybe 5 or 6 minutes every night? I mean, before you do the daily hymn, which he'd like to see too, you singing, bringing in the sheaves, you'd be amazed. Within 5 minutes, there would be a harmonium right there on the floor. There would be a lady with a tambourine, and Johnny would be saying, bringing in the sheaves. It's just the way life is, friends. And so how can I fight? Please, if you will, Al. Ein, zwei, drei. This is my nose flute. For those of you who have never heard it, this nose flute has been under wraps for some time due to a vast public outcry of indignation when I was playing this a year or so ago. You want to hear? Oh, you want me off mic, huh? Give you a little idea what it's like. And for those of you who wonder what this is not one of those plastic humanitones or whatever they call them. It is not. This is a true nose flute, and the nose flute is an old Polynesian instrument, and I learned to play the nose flute just about the time I was taking up head dumping, which was about five. I was given a nose flute one time for my birthday by my Uncle Tom, who was not the kind of Uncle Tom that you know about at all. I mean, this is an Uncle Tom who was our bootlegging uncle. He bootlegged. He did. I'll never forget it. It wasn't until I was, well into my dotage that I discovered that Uncle Tom's two-year vacation was spent in a famous vacation resort in Kansas. In fact, I believe they even had at one time a large army installation near there. Did you hear about that? There's a place there. And we used to get postcards once in a while from that. You know, little signs says, this is where my room is, and a little cross up in the upper hand corner there. And I thought it was kind of interesting that he was in a hotel that had this fantastically high brick wall around it, you know, with all those little towers. But that was my Uncle Tom, bootlegging. I did have a bootlegging uncle. He bootlegged pretty good stuff, too, I understand. In fact, that's why he got in trouble. It was too popular. I mean, if you're a bad bootlegger, nobody says anything about it because nobody comes and buys the junk. And then, they'd have come around and buy the junk stuff there. And he was good. He used to turn it out. As a matter of fact, he was one of the very few people, I understood, in his day and age. You know, it's funny, I just heard rumors about it later on. They're still proud of Uncle Tom. He's still around. And they're proud of Uncle Tom because Uncle Tom was one of the few guys who turned out genuine scotch. The only man who turned out genuine scotch on the south side of Chicago. It was very good. Had a smoky flavor. And it was kind of, you know, well-aged. In fact, I understand that that he was one of the very few guys who really did age his stuff. I mean, he would age his whiskey as long as, oh, maybe 3 or 4 days and keep it there. And he'd age it. Of course, he developed a new technique. Now, it wasn't really new. I mean, it's a quite popular technique. He was one of the very few people who discovered that good Scotch whiskey of that type can be aged in a Sears Roebuck Model 13D bathtub. And he used to age it that way. Very good stuff. And in fact, even on the label, he had this little bathtub kind of thing. It's kind of nice. That reminds me, we have a commercial here for you. It's not for Scotch, but look, this is a live one here, Big Al. Please, would you please give me a little background music to this? Give me a little background music to this. Yes, sir. Hop, dig it on. Hop, it doo Now, this little portion of unbelievably deathless music and fantastic pseudo-scat singing is sent to you on behalf of the makers of that magnificent elixir of life, Miller High Life Beer. Oh, Miller High Life Beer, we love you all the way. Oh, 12 full ounces, that's a lot. Drink it down, good and light. Miller High Life, rich and golden, delicious, robust too. Oh, Miller High Life, we love you. Papa doo doo doo. All right, that's enough of that. That's a hell of a way here at 11. See? Miller High Life. The only thing better than 6 bottles of Miller High Life is 12 bottles of Miller High Life. Well, there is one thing better than 6 bottles of Miller High Life. That's probably 1 bottle of Chivas Regal, but that's something else. That's Miller High Life. So you go right out of that and do it, friend. Oh, just had a note there. That was the sales department. They've got this little buzzer here. Every time I do something bad, it rings like that. Yeah, they all up in Connecticut, they got these push buttons, you know, automatic works. They got detectors that work on their radios even when they're asleep, you know. Salesmen don't, I knew one once that was awake from Wednesday through noon on Friday. This is WOR, New York. And here comes another one of the little whoopies from the sales department. Hello, 23rd floor, come in.
The axe falls on secrecy at your Chevrolet dealers. You're invited to come in for a sneak preview during Washington's birthday week, Thursday, February 19 through Wednesday, February 25th. Your Chevy dealer is letting you get a sneak look at the most exciting news of the year, and we mean really exciting. So you'll be wise to do nothing, buy nothing, see nothing, till you see the happiest surprise of the year at your Chevrolet dealers. It's Washington's birthday. But you get the big surprise at your Chevrolet dealers during the sneak preview from Thursday, February 19 through Wednesday, February 25th. It's a great new way to save, and your Chevrolet dealer is where it's at.
Things just aren't what things have been. Your Chevrolet dealer.
Come get a sneak preview of the most exciting news of the year at your New Jersey Chevrolet
sneaky
dealer.
Sneaky person. Sneak preview. Da 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 dee dee dee. La da 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 dee dee da 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 dee. Oh, we have a little sad story here. I want number two, please, Al. Number two. Yeah, the other one now. I'll give you the cue for it because this is very important. This is a little note about a Chinese gentleman. What a sad little story. It's not easy, you know. I mean, life itself is not easy. If you're curious, you know, how this works. The next time you see this person, you know, it doesn't have to be a close friend of yours. You just go right up to him and you're doing something casual, like you're putting on piccalilli on a hot dog or something at Needick's. And just say to him or her, just say, like you've been thinking about it. See, you look down at your hot dog. You're chewing away at the hot dog. You really want to try an experiment? I'm serious, lad. You want to try something that really is an interesting experiment? I've done this. Just, you're eating your hot dog or you're drinking coffee. Something totally innocent. And you're putting piccalilli on the hamburger or something. You look down at the plate. And next year is, you know, Aki. See, he's sitting there and he's putting hamburger on the plate there. And he's got the ketchup going all over the place. And then, as if you have been thinking about this for a long time, you say, you know, Aki?
Mm-hmm.
He answers, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Mustn't be very easy, Aki.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's not easy, is it?
Well, you know.
Invariably, you will get a rise. They'll say, how did he know? How did he know about that problem?
Huh?
So, no, it's all right, Aki.
Well, what do you mean? How do you know?
So, well, you know, Aki, there's been a lot of talk. I mean, after all, you can't keep something like that quiet all the time. And, you know, these things leak out. And I just want to tell you, I'm with you.
Yeah? It must have been Fred who's talking.
So Fred? No, not Fred. No. It's all over the 12th floor. I heard it down at the Mack truck garage the other day.
Oh, really?
That's all there is to it. You don't say any more about it. You just walk away. All right, all set. Bring it on there, please.
Oh, chinochilato, hola, 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 hola.
Now, for the benefit of those of you, in case you're curious, I just don't want to offend any of you who speak Cantonese. I can only sing in the Mandarin dialect, and I know that most of you out there speak Cantonese, but after all, you can't help your background. And that was done in Mandarin. And I must admit, though, I unfortunately have a bad Midwestern accent in my Mandarin, and I would like to salute a Chinese gentleman in Boston who had a bad thing happen to him the other day. Of course, a lot of bad things happen in Boston. I mean, the Chinese and everybody else. But here's a little note from Boston. A Chinese man stacked his belongings on the street yesterday as he prepared to move to another apartment. Then he rushed back upstairs to get more. From a third floor window, he saw a city sanitation crew pitching his cases into the scoop of a gigantic garbage truck. He's up on the third floor. Oh, it's all over, y'all, he hollered. Dashing downstairs, the man made a jump for the scoop. You know the big scoops that pick it up? He made a jump for the scoop along with it. You know, he made a grab, and the scoop just went up. Up he went with his belongings, the whole bit, and dumped them right into the truck. Let's go. Now, come on. Watch it there, Al. Well, the truck driver realized what had happened, shut off the engine before the man was hurt, but he emerged covered with garbage from head to foot, completely coated with potato peelings and assorted other stuff, including a lot of coffee grounds. And he stood there for a couple of minutes and could only holler in Chinese. He got so excited, he forgot all of his English. It's not every day that you have a Chinese guy jump out of your scoop or your garbage truck yelling, covered with potato peelings. We'd like to salute you out there tonight. It's bad news. Bad news. Hey, you know, we got a note here from a guy who wrote, and he said, a guy from the Army, one of our listener types. He says, Shepherd, stay awake tonight. He says, sleep well tonight, Shepherd. I'm quoting one of our listeners who's now in the, he's in the Army, see? He says, he signs his letter. He says, well, Shep, you can now sleep well. Sleep well tonight. Your Action Army is awake. Well, with one of our listeners in there, I wouldn't bet on that. But nevertheless, he wrote me a note from this place up and down in Georgia. And he says, Shepard, he says, we're right outside of Augusta here. And all those army towns are like neon arcades, tattoo parlors, jewelry stores, hotels, motels, houses of shaky reputation. That's the way it is, man. Well, you know, that one word got me. Tattoo parlors. And I don't know whether I should tell you this or not tonight. Because there's a lot of nervous people out there. You know, it's Friday night, and everybody gets a little, little pushing it there. Oh, yes, there's the Friday night. You know, there is such a thing now that the doctors, particularly psychologists, recognize as the Friday night tension. Well, you know, everybody's looking forward to the weekend. And they figure this weekend it's going to really happen. You know, it's going to be really fantastic, the ultimate weekend. It's going to be really great. And yet there's a little voice way down inside him says, oh, forget it, Aki. What are you talking about? Great. You've blown the last 7,922 weekends since the time you were 8. Why do you think this one's going to be good?
Oh, well, it's going to be good. I got a big date going at Route 3 Diner. And we're going to hang around the diner, and then me and Clarence and Howie, we're going to go down to Phil Rizzuto's bowling alley. We're going to bowl, and then we're going to go pick up some girls in Plainfield, you know. And I forget it, Aki. It's going to be a buster-rooney. And so he's getting tense. Well, there is nobody gets tenser about weekends than guys in the Army. Why? Well, being in the Army is such an unbelievable drag right from the start. You are subjected to humiliations from 5 o'clock in the morning. Or even just getting up at 5 in the morning is humiliating. I mean, how many people would, human beings, walking around human beings would get up at 5:15 a.m. voluntarily. And if they did get up voluntarily, a snap to and pull in your gut. I don't think many of us. When you're in the Army, that's exactly what happens. The cannon goes off. I suppose in the new Army, they let them sleep through it to 11, 12 o'clock in the morning. In a pig, you know what. Let me tell you, the Army gets up in the early morning. I mean, really early. And so you start at 5 in the morning. All day long, you do this ridiculous, boring thing. Like sit there and take apart the M1 and put it together again. Take it apart, put it together again. Take it apart and put it together again. You do this until noon. Then you go in, you have some spam. No, you don't have spam anymore. What you do is go in actually and have you have meatloaf. If you don't have meatloaf, you have salmon loaf, which is always good. Salmon loaf with pickled the carrots. That's a big thing in the Army. Salmon loaf, pickled carrots, and some Jell-O. That's kind of a nice rounded meal. And then you have some Kool-Aid, usually grape Kool-Aid, with that. That'll wash it all down. Well, then the next 17 hours, it seems like, you spend climbing down a telephone pole. You climb up to the top, you climb down again. You climb up to the top, and climb. This is if you're in the Signal Corps. You climb up, you climb down, and the wind is coming, the rain. You climb up, you climb down. And then you go in at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and you spend another happy an hour and a half watching a VD movie. That's always fun. It's a lot of fun. To remind you of all kinds of things. And then finally, here you drag your you-know-what off the bed in the sack there about 10 o'clock at night, and you've had an exciting day. Well, that's the way it goes, day in, day out, day in. So naturally, when the weekend comes up and you've got a pass, man, you are excited. Man, oh, you just count each minute, you just see the seconds ticking off. Dripping through that vast hourglass of eternity like some frozen molasses. I mean, boredom accompanies you in the Army like a strange cheesecloth cocoon. Like some, well, it's like you're in the middle of an invisible Brillo pad. A Brillo pad made out of furry stuff. You're bored. In fact, it's so boring sometimes that a guy can yell right in your face and you can't hear him. Yeah, have you ever been so bored that all your senses just cut out, they just don't work? Well, this happens in a classroom a lot of times. You're sitting about a third of the way back, and there's a teacher. Incidentally, I believe all teachers should take voice lessons. I just wonder how many people never learned anything about math at all because they had a teacher that went, and the multiplication for division, and the future watch. So many people place their voice up, not even in their nose. I don't know where they place it, you know. There's a thing called vocal placement. You've heard of it in this business, haven't you, Al? Well, vocal placement means where your voice comes from, right? Well, you've got a whole big body, you see. You can bring your voice from your foot. You can bring your voice from your gut, like Phil Tonkin. You can bring your voice from your chest. Or you can bring it up from your throat, like this. Most people talk like this. Or you can bring it up from your nose. You're the same person, but you always talk like this. And what would you do? And then finally there's the person who brings his voice or her voice from some strange place about 3.5 feet above his head and off a little bit to the right. It sounds like some strange medieval bird is doing it. You can't learn math when somebody's drumming at you like that, like the sound of a fingernail going up and down a blackboard eternally. Well, you know that feeling of sitting in a classroom? And there's a... First of all, cosines are dull. To me, anyway. I mean, that may not be to you. Or do you find the cotangents exciting? Are you a person who just wakes up in the morning and stretches and takes a big, deep breath and looks out at the sun and beats your chest and says, "Oh, boy! Oh, wowie! Now for some good, brisk differential equations. Oh, boy. Oh, I love it." Oh, no. No. Not at all. And then, if you're like most people, you're bored and your head starts to buzz. You know, you get this hum back in the back of your mind. And coming through, this is and your eyes start drooping. You know that feeling of your eyes hanging down at half mast? So it's almost like they're gigantic 500-pound weights on each eyelid just going down, down, down. You pop your eyes open. Well, this is the way it is in the Army all the time. All the time. Total boredom. And so any action is exciting. And one night, just because of boredom, in fact, I wonder how many guys did this and carried through with it because of boredom and have lived to regret it. One night, me and Gasser, we got a weekend. We've been in Fort Monmouth. We've been in Fort Monmouth. Actually, we were in a slum part of Fort Monmouth. There used to be a slum part of Fort Monmouth. Did you know that Army camps have... most people tend to think of the Army camp, you know, as a kind of homogenous whole. There's this thing called the Army camp. Well, do you know that there are ghettos within Army camps? There's bad neighborhoods and good neighborhoods. Did you know about that? There are. There really are. And there's the official places. There's the Cadbury. And they live in these beautiful brick barracks with all kinds of nice garages and the whole business. They have all their cars pulled out there in front, and they wear sharp uniforms. And their cleaning always comes back. When you're in the Cadbury, you get your cleaning. And you never have any problems with the laundry because you're it. You know, you're a Cadbury. Cadbury's, that's the establishment, see? That's the Cadbury. And then even the best neighborhood, of course, is the officers' quarters. They live in quarters. The GIs don't live in quarters. It's just the officers' quarters. And you see those beautiful lawns all around there with the trees growing, and they have bushes, and they have these beautiful... All officers have beautiful daughters with blonde hair and all that stuff. That's the officers' quarters, right? And then there's the Cadbury. And then there's what they call the training area, generally. Now, this is just the sort of transient troops. And then way down at the other end of the camp, amid muck and mire, amid all kinds of goo and
constant complaining and irritation. There is what they call, well, I even hate to say it, it's what they call the replacement pool. This is where every guy who comes arrives who isn't attached to a company or something, he just gets, it's the garbage heap of the Army. And so here, you know, and this is where boredom just doesn't know any end. It's just like you're in a human garbage dump and you're just hanging around. So one night, me and Gasser, we were in this, Camp Wood was this, sort of a slum. It was a ghetto of Fort Monmouth. One night, we're sitting there. It's Thursday night. We are both going to get a pass Friday night. And we're all excited. And I'm sitting on the edge of my bunk, and I'm sitting, you know, bored. And I can't believe it. I'm actually getting out. For something like 3 months, I've been in this hellhole, and nothing's happened. Nothing. Nothing but boredom. Ridiculous lectures. Constantly telling me how to do a right face. Over and over. Been in the Army 9 years, and they tell me how to do a right face. And they're still telling me how to tie a knot. I mean, I could take a pot and put together an M1, not only in my sleep, unconscious. I could have done it probably when I was dead and shot. I could still do it, you know? It's just automatic. And still, they give me the lecture on that. If I saw one version of the VD film, I saw every version. Okay, they're very early Stagg films, actually. I was very, very, very good in a lot of them. I mean, I Am Curious Green. They used something called Green Gentian, yeah. But that's something else. But nevertheless, this Thursday night, I'm sitting there, and it was on a, well, it was a weekend just like this. It was a miserable winter, nothing weekend. And that's when boredom gets at its worst. I'm sitting in my bunk. I says, Gasser, where do you want to go? We're both, you know, we got our pass. We each got about $6, which is about all you get when you're a PFC friend in a casual company, man. And, you know, they've been nicking you for the laundry. They've been nicking you for everything, the company fund and everything. So here you are sitting down here with $6, and that's it. And the Gasser says, well, I don't know. We sure can't afford New York. I said, no. Where do you want to go? He said, I don't know. Boy, I'm going to get out of here, though. I said, I am too. Gasser, where would you like to go? Let's see. Where can we go where we won't have to spend a lot of dough getting there? I mean, you know, with a bus. Yeah, well, let's see. Atlantic City's a pretty much of a trip, you know. That's going to cost some dough getting there. And then when we get there, probably have to stay in his hotel and all that stuff. Forget Atlantic City. I says, yeah, okay. He says, well, what about Asbury Park, huh? I said, Asbury Park. No. Uh-oh. I had had some bad scene with a chick in Asbury Park in the USO. I wasn't going to go there. I said, forget Asbury Park. Well, we finally, sitting there, we're at a loss where to go. Sitting in our bunk in the barracks. Guy walks in, sits down on the other bunk. He said, what are you guys talking about? You know, you do that in the Army. Just now you get in a conversation. He said, what are you talking about? Gasser said, we're talking about where we want to go on this weekend. The guy said, I know the best place to go. Absolutely the best place. And Gasser says, where? Of course, this was an old veteran. You know, he's been ducking a boat for years. And Gasser says, where? See, you ever been to Long Branch? The guy said, Long Branch, where's that? See, we were both. He was from the West Coast. I was from the Midwest. We never heard of Long Branch. I said, Long Branch? Isn't that the name of some kind of potato or something? Long Branch potatoes? Yeah. He said, that's right. They invented them there. Fried potatoes, yeah, Long Branch potatoes. I said, well, where is it? He said, well, you take the number 3 bus, that's all. You take it right outside the gate there, down by Little Shrewsbury or Little Silver. You take the bus number 3, take you right to Long Branch. He said, man, this town goes. It goes. He said, listen, when you get to the bus station, you get off the bus, immediately there'll be this chick. Her name is Maria. She's Italian. He said, you just get off the check and holler, Maria, and you're in business. I said, really? Yeah, she meets every bus. So Gasser and I figured we're going to go to Long Branch. Well, we've been waiting for this leave now, this little weekend bippy, for roughly 2 months. I can't forget it. There was a slow, drizzling rain coming down.
Friday afternoon, and now it is chow. And Gasser and I are down there excitedly getting our passes. Cold. Ooh, you know, Jersey can be the most miserable. The Jersey Shore can actually be the most miserable place in the world for winters. This side of Greenland. I don't know what there is to that Jersey Shore. It isn't that it's so cold, particularly. It is cold, too. But it's just miserable. It's gray. It's cold, and it cuts, and the wind, and it's wet. It's always wet down there. Wet. And the people get mad, you know. They walk around and they say, "Get out of my way! Who do you think you are, you know?" It's Jersey. Well, we get on this bus wearing our GI raincoats, and we've got the, you know, we've got our DOP kits with us. We're going out for the big weekend in Long Branch, New Jersey. We should have known. Of course, I learned a lesson. And so we took off on a bus, and I noticed a couple of guys sitting in the bus with lunch buckets, you know, mad-looking guys. They were going to Long Branch, too. And here we are going on our gala. Well, it seemed like almost instantly it was dark out. Dark and rainy and wet. It was a miserable Jersey winter. At the car, the bus we were in was rattling, you know how Jersey buses are, and a couple of beer cans are rolling around on the floor. And Gasser's still trying to pretend he's excited. Boy, isn't it great? Huh? Isn't it great to be out? Ah, boy. You know, it really wasn't great to be out because the barracks was warm and the Zinsmeister and Goldberg and all those guys were still sitting back there drinking GI beer and telling stories and stuff. Here we are in this miserable bus coming to Long Branch, New Jersey, which, by the way, sounded very exciting because neither of us have been to Long Branch. It's been pretty tough getting to be a Long Branch since, I'll tell you that. So we rode this bus all the way on out. And we got to the bus station. Now, have you ever been to the bus station in Long Branch? Well, I have. So we got to the bus station. The rain is coming down. And here we are now. We're ready. We got $6. Each of us has got $6. What do we do? The whole weekend before us. This fantastic weekend. And Gasser says, "Here we are." And, of course, was Maria there? No, nobody there. It was a drunken sailor laying on the floor. That's about it, you know. And an old guy standing over behind the counter selling Wrigley gum. So we get out of the bus. Well, what are you going to do? What are you going to do, Shep? Yeah, I don't know. How much something to eat? So, okay. Something to eat, something to eat. Yeah, that's a good idea. Let's get something to eat. That's what you first do in the Army. Let's get something to eat. So he said, "Let's get something to eat." So he says, "Listen, this is an Italian place. I hear there's a lot of Italians around here. Let's go to a good spaghetti joint, huh? How about getting some good Italian food?" Great idea, Gasser. So we go down the street, and here's this La Mamma Mia someplace, something, you know, it's an Italian restaurant. It says genuine Jersey Shore Italian food. So we go in there. I'll be doggone. I'm sitting there, and what am I eating? Canned spaghetti. It's exactly the kind of spaghetti my mother used to give me, that's, you know, Franco-American spaghetti, and all. I'm eating the spaghetti. And we're still keeping up the presets. Isn't this great, Gasser? I mean, real Italian food. This is the real stuff. Gasser saying nothing. He's shoveling in the Franco-American. We're both eating the spaghetti, see? And, of course, it was fun until we each got the bill for $2.60, you know, for the Franco-American spaghetti. That was our introduction to the Jersey. So, well, we walk out now into the night. What are we doing now? Well, down the street was the single movie. There was a movie in town. Look at the movie. It was exactly the same film that had been playing in the camp for the last 3 months, which we could see for 12 cents, and which we'd seen 9 times already. That killed the movie. So we walked down the street and looked in the windows. I remember spending an hour and a half with Gasser looking in an Army and Navy store window, looking at uniforms that were on mannequins. And we walked out to the USO. Oh, that was a singing place. We went to the USO, and the rain was coming down. There were a couple of tired-looking corporals sitting in there and another drunken sailor. We went in and had a tuna salad sandwich, got a place to sleep, the YMCA. We went down to the Y. We checked in. We sat in the lobby for a while. The rain is coming down. We went into the pool. They had a rec hall there at the Y. It was closed for repairs. They were remodeling it. We went out on the street again. The rain is still coming down. Go back into the lobby again. Sit for a while. Go back out again. The rain is coming down. We walk down the street. It's still raining. It's getting cold. Now it's starting to sleet. Jersey sleet, you know. And finally, guy says, let's get a beer. We walk into this joint. You've been in Jersey beer joints. We walk into the joint. Three guys look up. One of them's a Marine, 7 feet tall, weighs 600 pounds. And he gets up like all night. He's been waiting for two GIs to come in so we could knock their heads together. Gassus says, let's go. We turn around. We walk out. The rain is coming down. We go back and sit in the lobby next to the potted palm for a while. I said, Gass, I'm going to go up so I can get a good start in the morning. I mean, real good start. We get up real early in the morning, and we'll do something really great tomorrow. What do you say? Let's go up and knock off and go to bed and forget it, and then get a real good start in the morning. I'm a little tired. It's going to be great to get a nice sleep, you know. Get out of the barracks. We get in the elevator. Up we go. Turns out that we have been put in a room with 1,722 cots. A lot of sleeping GIs. There was a staff sergeant who was drunk laying on the floor across the door. We walk in. I'm asleep. It's a singing weekend, you see, already. Next morning, dawn's bright and miserable. It's now 7 o'clock in the morning. You just wake up out of habit, you know. You think you're going to sleep late, you know. Well, actually, we did sleep late. After all, we'd been used to getting up at 4:30. Now it's 7 o'clock. It's late, you know. Gasser gets up. Oh, boy, what a great night. Oh, he stretches. Rain is coming down. Snow, crud. Icicles are falling in one piece. Well, all afternoon, we just wandered around. We had to get back to camp at 8. And then it happened. About 7 o'clock that night, we're wandering towards the bus station, bored out of our skulls, when we see this sign that says, Tattooing Parlor. Tattooing Parlor. Professor Wizard, the great world-renowned tattooing artist. And he had all these pictures of dolphins and all kinds of things like anchors and mothers and purple hearts and all that stuff hanging in the window. We walk past it. Have you ever wondered why guys get tattooed, Al? Well, I have, and I know. They get tattooed because of boredom. We walk past, and Gasser says, what do you say we get tattooed? Let's just see what it costs. Have you ever priced a tattooing parlor? Well, we go in, and there's a whole bunch of guys sitting. They're sitting in line. There must be 9 guys sitting in there with their sleeves all rolled up. And the professor has got this white table, and he's got these electrical needles and stuff. And he's working away. This guy's sitting there, great big Marine, you know, with red hair. And he's tattooing Mother. You know, big purple heart with green tears coming out of it with a great big dagger through it that says, Mother, I will love you forever. Gigantic, high, must have been about 2.5 feet tall, you know. And Gasser and I sit down. The professor says, what can I do for you, boys? Why don't you decide what you would like first, and then when your turn comes, I will be all set for you, and you can have already your pick. I look around the walls, and there's all this stuff. You can get obscene things. You can get hearts. You can get flowers. You can get ships. You can get the Signal Corps flags. Would I love to have that one? You can get all the stuff. They would even tattoo your Army serial number on you, you know? Yeah, it's all over the wall there. See? Gasser says, hey, look at that one over there. Wouldn't it be great to have this blue mermaid? Look at that blue mermaid there with the pink fins. How about that? A blue mermaid with the pink fins. I think that's the one I'm going to get. Hey, how much, Professor, how much is a blue mermaid with the pink fins, one over there? But what size would you like? We have the number one size and number two size. The number two is the smaller one. That is $4. Guess, that's okay. I'll go for that. All right, I'll have the number two size. I decided that I was going to have myself this beautiful picture of the Washington Monument superimposed on the Stars and Stripes. Yeah, with the little stars around the top of it. And underneath it, it says Semper Fidelis. I thought it was kind of nice, you know? In God We Trust or something. We sat there and waited minute by minute as these guys went through. And just before it was Gasser's turn, the bus started to toot in the bus station. Gasser says, "I'll be right back. Wait a minute. This is the last bus. Listen, are you going to be here next week?" The person says, "I'm here every week. It's very good, very good. Don't miss your bus now, boys." We rush out, jump on the bus. Saved by the Long Branch bus. And if I had not been trapped by that bus right at this minute, I would have had a picture of the Washington Monument in a very embarrassing spot on my anatomy with the stars and stripes. And Gasser would have had a blue mermaid with pink fins. Thank God for that Long Branch bus, wherever you are tonight.